I'd like to welcome everyone out. Thank you for being here this morning. Now it's, there we go. Now I'm really loud. All right, I got the thumbs up from John, so I'm good. I've asked our brother Todd to open us up with a word of prayer, so I'm going to let Todd take it away.
Father, which art in heaven, we're indeed grateful for another beautiful Lord's Day that you've given us, another opportunity that we have to meet here and to study another lesson from your word. Father, we pray that we'll take the things that are presented before us today, that we'll apply them to our lives, we might be better followers of you from day to day. We're indeed grateful for the health that we enjoy, the ability that we have to come out to assemble. Pray for our brothers and sisters that don't enjoy such health. Pray that you might be the ones that have lost loved ones, that you might comfort them. We're thankful especially for the gift of your Son and the great sacrifice that he made on our behalf, and it's in his name that we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, sir. So this particular lesson is really interesting for me. I have never actually taught or done a sermon, for that matter, done a whole lot of studying about Martha and Mary. So I have heard over my 20-plus years that this is a topic that's done in a lot of ladies' studies. There's a book called Mary in a Martha World. I think even last Thursday or Friday, there was even a study about this at a ladies' Bible class here in town. With that said, I chose not to look at Mary in a Martha World book. I chose not to look at any of those references. I wanted to try to come at it from a different perspective, if at all possible. Maybe I won't. Maybe I will get myself in a big hole. And in that case, I get myself in a big hole. Johnny's going to take over, and I'm going to sit down at that point. So, because we already agreed on that. If I go in a direction that I make a bunch of ladies mad this morning, we're just going to turn it over to Johnny. He's an expert on this kind of stuff. So we're going to dig in here. We're going to start with Martha. I always like to know who my characters are before I actually start studying my characters. What is really interesting about Martha, how many Marthas are in the Bible? Not anybody at one time. Everybody's thinking, how many Marthas are in the Bible? You're right, just one. It's just this one that I can find, unless you can find another one. And they reference her as Martha of Bethany. Now, when I first looked at the map, I found a Bethany, and I was preparing for Bethany, but that's Bethany to your right here, above the north of the Dead Sea, also known as Bethsaida. I do not believe that that's the Bethany they're talking about. I actually believe it's the Bethany next to Jerusalem, which is right there. So Martha of Bethany, and you can see Jerusalem. If you look down here, you've got your little key to your map. It's not a social studies class. But that much is 20 miles, and you can see that Bethany and Jerusalem probably less than 10 miles from each other. Which really makes sense when you see in John 12, where Jesus is going to be heading back to Jerusalem there, and he has a meal there with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus there in John 12. And you can see how close that is. So Martha of Bethany, Martha here, I guess that's just east of Jerusalem. So the only one we know of, the only reference we have, if you Google this or get any kind of a text, I thought this was really good, but, you know, she's a biblical figure described in the Gospels of Luke and John, together with her siblings Lazarus and Mary of Bethany. She is described as living in the village of Bethany near Jerusalem. She was witness to Jesus resurrecting her brother Lazarus. So, that's pretty much all we know about Martha. She does have this brother, Lazarus. And, of course, here it references Mary of Bethany. If my memory is correct, Mary is never mentioned as Mary of Bethany. I think they added that here, which only makes sense because it would be Martha of Bethany, therefore Lazarus of Bethany, Mary of Bethany, and how they get that out there. So we kind of have a good idea. Debates going on about Martha, who she is. She's referenced three times, Luke chapter 10. She's referenced in John 11, the whole chapter references her. And then the first four verses or five verses of John chapter 12. And so that kind of gets us about Martha. Now, Mary, on the other hand, all kinds of debates and discussions and all kind of craziness going on. So, how many Marys are there? Just throw that out there. See if anybody knows off the top of your head. We got four, we got six or seven. Anybody else? Three. We got three here. We got a couple back here. Well, scholars, if they agree all the time, and they it seems like they had agreed for the last 50 years, but now they're not agreeing anymore, seven is what they had agreed on, that there were seven Marys that you can look at. Now, there's a debate, well, maybe there's six. We're kind of going back and forth. We're kind of debating whether it's seven or whether it's six. Now, when I look at this, I look at the Marys, I'm very familiar with this particular culture with names. A lot of things you guys don't know about me, but one of the things in my past is I practically was Amish. Not really, but even though people in our neighborhood think Stephanie and I were Amish, pretty funny story, I can tell you that later. But I did grow up with, I grew up around the Amish, where I lived, all my neighbors were Amish. I did not wear black clothes, you know, riding a buggy. My dad did have a buggy and we did have horses, but I did go to a regular school and all that kind of stuff. So, but one of the things about the Amish is they only use about 20 names. So trying to figure out who they all are, and when my wife came in, and the same group in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, where I grew up, they moved up here to Auburn, Tennessee. So I know all the ones in the Auburn, the old order Amish, know all of them, know their family. But, like, I can tell you who they are, who their parents are, who their uncles are, who their aunts are, and all that. So what they do is they will use their first name, and so every family will have a John. So there are 900 Johns. There are 900 Elis. There are 900 Moses. There are 900 of them. So when you say, hey, if you talk to John today, nobody knows who you're talking about because you can't just do John. So what they do is they take the first name and then every child's middle name will be their father's name. So it literally could be John, you know. And that starts kind of narrowing it down. And then if you need to get to the town, you'll do that. And so when you're talking to them, you'll always do their middle initial. So if you see on their mailbox, it'll always be their first name and their middle initial. And all of them will have their father's middle initial. And so that's kind of one way they begin to do that. And then you need to add Auburn or Lawrenceburg or Sonora or Morgantown if you need to get more specific. And then you might even do Denson Road, where I grew up on, or you'll get, you know, different roads. But very confusing. And so when I saw this with Mary, I'm like, man, there's Mary all over the place. Because they didn't have last names, you know. And how do you know which Mary? And then you see Joseph. You see all kinds of Josephs. And you see all different kinds of people. And so it just, like I said, it kind of reminded me trying to figure all this out and who it was. So need to know this because there is a debate about one of the Marys. If not, this Mary is one in here. So Marys of the Bible. Scholars have agreed on seven. Like I said, there's a slight debate on whether there are six or not. The obvious one, Matthew chapter 1, Matthew chapter 2, Matthew chapter 13, and then Matthew chapter 27, also referenced in Mark 6, 15, Luke 1 and 2, and Acts 1, Joseph's wife or Jesus' mother. I think that's the one we're all very familiar with Mary. And we'll have a lesson about Mary in there. And I point this verse 13 out because you're going to see some of these names of a Mary in a minute who also has some children with some similar names as this Mary, but it's not the carpenter's son. His mother's not called Mary. His brothers are James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And you're going to see some of these here in a minute. There's another Mary that has children that has some similar names, but not the exact same names. So that's number one. This is the one where there's some debate about, and I'll just go ahead and I probably spent more time on the Mary's names than I did the rest of the lesson, but there's some debate whether or not Mary Magdalene and Mary in the Mary and Martha story are the same person. It doesn't seem to be the case, though. Two different types of locations. It is hypothetically possible because this story does come before the raising of Lazarus or the Mary and Martha story. But she had seven demons, or the demons were brought out of her. No really reference to that there. But Mary Magdalene is mentioned many, many times at the end and at the beginning. And you can see here in Matthew 27, verses 56 and 61, Matthew 28, 1, Mark 15, 40, 47, Mark 16, 1, brought the spices. And there's some reference to Mary in John 12, the Mary and Martha. Remember, what did she do? She put oil on, and then Judas says, whoa, what are you doing? You know, you're spending all this money. And so they're like, yeah, there's some correlation, but maybe not. In Luke 8, seven demons, we see that she and some others got healed. And that's where the first time we see her. And then, of course, you know, Luke 24 and John 19, the empty tomb. So we hear a lot about Mary Magdalene. Some debate there. I'm not going to stand up here and say 90, you know, 100%. There's no, they're not the same person. I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to present you the information because I can't stand with certainty on either one. But my belief is that Mary and the Martha story and Mary Magdalene are different folks. But this is the Mary here that's presented. Tons of information written about Mary Magdalene. And you can see here, they've even got little things you can click on, how they've got her at the cross, at the burial, at the empty tomb, and then witnesses to the apostle. And so, the interesting thing, though, that every time it mentions Mary of Magdalene, how does it always reference Mary of Magdalene? It always put the Magdalene part on there. It never skips that part, which is kind of unique, because you would think that if it did it so many times with frequency, that if it were... if any of these other Marys were her, that it would throw the Magdalene part on that as well. So that's another interesting fact on that. Then we have Mary, Lazarus' brother. And as far as we can tell, that particular Mary, Mary of Bethany, is in Luke, John 11, and then John 12, 1 through 2. We don't see any other references to this particular Mary if we separate these in any other location. So Luke 10, John 11, and then 12, 1 and 2. And then there's Mary, and this is the one there's, you know, some debates on because you see some of these names, but Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, or Joseph, and depending on how you translate that. And you get some of the same names with Mary's, the mother of Jesus, because she's got some sons' names that are similar to these names. And so this is one of those, again, that gets a little out there, but you got Mary, the mother of Joseph. I love this one. I love how Matthew 28 says, and the other Mary was there. Come on, Matthew, help me out here. The other Mary. Who is the other Mary? Can you not be a little more specific? We got six other Marys here. I laugh at that one. The other Mary. And then Mary, the mother of James the Less. When you do a study on the book of James, not my favorite book, by the way, who's the author? Well, it's either James, the brother of Jesus, James, the son of Alphaeus, or James the Less, because those are your three Jameses. We see here this is mother of James the Less, so you see James the Less being referenced here. And then Mary, the mother of James, and I guess that's pronounced Salome or Solemn. And then Mary, the mother of James here in Luke 24:10. But there's also Mary, Jesus' brother James, so is that? And so this is where it gets a little crazier on this one. But most scholars will separate Mary, mother of Jesus, and then Mary of this mother here of these gentlemen. These other ones are pretty easy. Mary, mother of John, Acts 12:12, pretty clear there. And then the Mary of wife of Clopas. In John 19:25, I think that one's really no debate there, at least from what we can gather. And then Mary of Romans, I just put Mary of Romans. She's mentioned in the book of Romans, Romans 16:16. So there Paul says, I forget how he puts it, but mentions Mary there. So those are the seven Marys. So I'm going to open it up, see if anybody has anything they want to add to this or any questions or comments. Hard questions go to Johnny, easy questions go to me, so I'm going to let you guys, anybody study this or have any other ideas on the Marys? I did find this very fascinating, by the way. Like I said, I spent way too much time on this, but...
So just Mary Magdalene, in some translations she's referred to as Mary Magdala, which I think is indicating Mary from Magdala, which is a city close to whatever the body of water is north of the Dead Sea, that whatever that lake is, I can't remember the name of it. But so that indicates she is a separate person, the Mary from the city of Magdala.
Yep. That was one thing I went after I shaved. I was going to go put that in there, and I was like, jerk, I don't have time. So, but yeah, thank you. That is good. I'm glad you referenced that. The geographical differences between the two locations is another indicator that they would be different. It is a real debate out there that Mary Magdalene and Mary, Lazarus' sister, are the same person, though. So if you get out there with any scholars, don't be shocked when you hear that. That is a real debate that goes on. I just don't believe the text. You take the literal looking at the text. I just don't see that it backs it up. Anybody else? And that's why I even referenced the Marys here to even just to address this.
Just want to clarify, that's Romans 16 and verse 6 for the people watching at home.
16 and verse 6. Very good. I didn't proof for that, but yeah, I appreciate that. That's Romans 16 and verse 6. Now, here's the really cool thing, is that when we study Mary, I don't know what the date is, we get to go back through all these slides, so you guys are going to be experts in. So I'm just going to ask you how many Marys then, and you guys are going to be able to know all the Marys. So that'll be good. We can breeze through this when we actually study Mary, the mother of Jesus. Okay, so now let's get into the text. There's a lot of thoughts on this particular text. I tried to come at it from how I do some of my large sales meetings. So when I go into a very large meeting, one of the things I've always done my whole career is I try to delete everything out of my brain. So I'm about to walk into, a big meeting, let's say it's worth $1 million, and I'm about to walk into it. I delete everything in my brain. You're probably thinking, what are you doing? Don't you have like questions you want to ask, or don't you have some agenda? No, I try to just blank it all out, because I want to be fresh when I walk in there. I want to go the direction the meeting needs to go based on information I'm getting real time in that meeting. And sometimes I go all different ways. And it's been very good for me, because sometimes if you get locked into something in a meeting, you forget everything else that's going on, and you try to force a meeting to go a certain way. So I just want to just be fresh. I want to go in and do that. So I wanted to look at this in that similar way, which is why I did not reference some of the books that are written on this, because I want to just see kind of what, and I'd never studied it, so we just want to kind of jump in. And so here's the text here in 38. It says, "Now as they were traveling along, he," that Jesus here, "entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him in her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who was also seated at the Lord's feet and was listening to his word. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do serving myself? Then tell her to help me.' But the Lord answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted about many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her.'" And so, very interesting here. We see Jesus traveling. Jesus is going, he goes everywhere, right? He's traveling around. He references that he has no place to lay his head. He has no home. Yet, does Jesus seem to ever go hungry? No. Does Jesus ever seem to have a place that he can go and visit with people and see them? No. The interesting thing here is, up until this point, we don't see any reference to Martha and Mary. Is this the first time that Jesus has met them? I'm not real sure. Maybe not. But we see here, whatever the case is that Mary and Martha here are very hospitable. They welcome him in. It doesn't say how many were with him, or if he was by himself. I'm trying to remember here. Rarely was he completely by himself. But so he enters here into this home, and I find that very very good, because we don't see any reference about, oh, I don't know if he needs to come in. Oh, I don't know if it's ready. Immediately they were both open. At least Martha and Mary were open here. Mary there immediately, and you got to kind of imagine them coming in, and so many times I read a text, we'll Americanize it. So when it says here, you know, sitting at his feet, you know, they were probably literally sitting down. They didn't have, you know, tables and chairs, you know, like red oak tables and like chairs around, or a big comfy couch, or even a futon, you know, there. They were there. And so I imagine when you come into a house, you know, you sit down. He probably was talking, probably had, I'm sure Jesus was one of these individuals, from we can see to the text, had interesting stories, or was teaching or talking, or a great philosopher. And so Mary seems to be very immediately very intrigued by that. And so she begins to listen or sit at his feet. Martha seems to be thinking, I've got to get preparations here. We got people to feed. It doesn't give us a specific time here. I don't know if it's lunchtime, dinner time, supper time, snack time. I don't know. I don't know if they ate every 2 hours like we do. But it must have been something. Is it when you have guests, what do you always do? If you're a very nice person and you're very hospitable, when people come, what do you always do? Would you like a drink? Would you like some water? Would you like some pecan pie? Would you like some ice cream? You know? And so it seems that Martha here has got these people. Like I said, we don't know what time of day. At least the text doesn't tell us here. And she seems to be pulling the burden of all this on herself. And she seems to be saying, Martha, we got a lot to do here. Get up and help me. And she references that to Jesus saying, hey, can you tell Mary to help me? I got a lot going on here. And the Lord answered in her and said, hey, you know, you're worried and distracted about many things around you, but it's only necessary. You know, Mary is sitting here and doing what's important right now, or the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. So the first question here, I throw up here. There is a time and a place for everything. That's the first thing that I think about in my mind. There's a time and a place for everything. And if you go to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, 1 through 8, for everything is a season. There's a time for every activity under hand, a time to be born, a time, you know, you get the whole path. We're not going to go there. There is a time for everything. So I've heard my whole life that Martha was bad because she should have been listening to Jesus, and yet she was cleaning and she was cooking and she was doing whatever, and we're just going to burn her at the stake because she's a terrible person. And you shouldn't be doing that. Well, that can't be. That can't be, because, I mean, we do have to work in our homes, right? We cannot not ever work in our homes. There in John chapter 12, which we'll look at in a minute, what is Martha doing when they come in immediately? What do we see her doing? Come on, ladies, you've studied this a million times. What is Martha doing in John chapter 12? Like within the first verse. She is serving. Immediately, she's serving. Jesus must have been not too mad at her, because he's there and he's letting her do it and he doesn't say anything this time. So it can't be that. But then again, is there a time to study? Is there a time to study your Bible? Would it be wrong to study your Bible 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year? That's all you did was study. Would there be anything wrong with that? Absolutely, it would be. Okay, and you're thinking, what did Gerald just say? It's wrong to study my Bible? Well, it can be, because there's a time to do other things. We got to work and support our families. We got to sleep. We got things we got to do. So there is a time and a place for everything. Okay, Ryan, don't get me in too big of a hole here. I'm doing a good job on my own.
Okay, so the fact that it says in verse 38 that a certain woman named Martha welcomed her into her house suggests that it was Martha's house. So normally, or naturally, she'd be the one that's about the business of the home, and Mary's there just, you know, reaping the benefit of Jesus being in town.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so she feels responsibility. She's wanting to do this. So is there a time and a place for everything? There is a time and a place for it. Time to work. There's a time to sleep. There's a time to clean your house. There's a time to cook. There's a time to study your Bible. There's a time to pray. There's a time to come here and worship. There is a time to do anything. So here's a question I got to ask you. You know, with that, there is a time to do all of these things. So here's Jesus in the flesh, and Jesus is there teaching. And sometimes we forget that there are times to do different things. And maybe what we're seeing here is that here's an opportunity to see Jesus there teaching and preaching right in front of you. And so we do this all the time. We have opportunities that we cannot what? We say this all the time. Honey, I got to do this. This is an opportunity that I can't pass up. This is an opportunity I can't pass up. I know the lawn has to be mowed, but man, this is an opportunity today that can't be passed up. So today, we're not going to mow the lawn because this is an opportunity that we can't pass up. And I could go on and on. Does it mean you never cut the grass again? It just means this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to be listening to Jesus. What would you give up to be able to listen to Jesus? Would you give up mowing the grass for the day? Would you give up, you know, raking leaves? Would you give up? What would you give up to do that? And so we see here that he's saying, hey, the good teacher is here teaching. There are a lot of things that are important, but Mary here has taken the time because this is a great opportunity for her. And so there's a time to do that. Did Jesus condemn anything? And before I studied this, I felt like that he said something was condemned here. Was anybody condemned or anything specifically? You're a sinner, you're going to hell for doing what you're doing here. Did that happen here? I don't see any condemnation anywhere in that text. Before reading this, I thought that I was going to see that there, that there was going to be some condemnation there. I can't find it. Pointing out what's important, because there's nothing wrong with having your house prepared and giving people food and being prepared for that. That's why he didn't condemn it. But he's pointing out, hey, there's a time for everything. I think there's a huge lesson there, and if I was in preacher mode, we'd go into a sermon right now, and we talk about how there's a time to be hospitable. There's a time, and I already kind of talked about it, and we'd go through a whole list of all the things you can do and how it's important to do those things and how you got to see when that opportunity presents itself. And you can't have the mindset, well, my house isn't ready, so I can't have a Bible study right now. Call me back in 2 or 3 weeks when I get everything ready to go, then we can do that. You know, I really can't have anybody over right now to study, or I can never have anybody over to study because my house isn't big enough. I can't do that. Well, is that what it's about, how big your house is? Well, you know, I'd like to have people over. I'd like to invite Jesus into my house, but, you know, I don't have any filet mignon. I know he likes filet mignon, and all I got's bologna. Maybe Jesus is kind of referencing that here, that what's really important here. So some thought questions. I thought I was going to have a bunch, and then I decided I'd get in trouble. So I only had one, so it's not plural anymore. I may add some later when I decide to go this path again. Are some things more important at different times? Should be an S on that. Are some things more important at different times? If an opportunity presents itself in 45 minutes for you to maybe have somebody over at your house, don't say, I'm not going to have them over because I didn't vacuum. I'm not going to have them over because I didn't take the trash out before I left. I'm not going to have them over because here's the deal. We can find a million excuses on not to do the right thing. Now, one of the most haunting verses in the Bible is in my favorite book. Does anybody know what it is? James chapter 4. I think it's 17. I always get 14 and 17. Life is a vapor. I'm pretty sure it's 14. And then 17 is to know the right thing to do and to not do it. To him, it is sin. You know, sometimes we know what the right things to do is, but we can come up with a sure long list of not doing it. And Martha here, she was trying to do the right thing, but maybe she should have been just saying, you know what, forget all this. We got some crackers in a box somewhere. We can eat those because Jesus is here. And we're going to study and we're going to get the most out of this and we'll see what happens. I want to tell you a story. Well, before that, I'm going to do this slide. Don't let things that don't really matter get in the way of things that matter. Does it really matter about all these little things in our lives sometimes? What really matters? Jesus pointed out that what really mattered was learning about God and learning about what His message was. At the end of the day, that was the most important thing. There wasn't anything wrong with what Martha was doing. But her relaxing just a little bit and maybe studying there and letting some things go might be the way to do it in this situation. And the same thing in our lives. There were so many, oh, I got to go here. I got to go do this. I don't have time. In the big scheme of things, is it really that important? Don't let things that don't really matter get in the way of things that really matter. Stephanie, I had the privilege before we had kids to travel abroad. Went to Ireland. Went to Ireland because I went to college with a guy I'm really good friends with. His parents lived in Ireland. And so we got to hang out with him. It was real cool. Went over to the house and ate. And he was actually, he wasn't an elder. We kept bugging him about being an elder at the congregation there in Dublin. But he took the preacher on Sunday nights and went up to Belfast, Ireland. And they said, hey, do you want to go? And I'm like, what do we got to do? Yeah, let's go. I mean, we're in Ireland. I mean, I don't have anything to do. And you're driving. And I can't drive very well on the wrong side of the road, so let's do it. And so we went up to Belfast. Interesting, if you see the little yellow and green, it's really interesting. That used to be a big deal in Ireland, not when we were there. But you quit using the euro between yellow and green, and you start using the pound because the yellow people still are loyal to the British government. Cracks me up because it's the island of Ireland. But anyway, it's a whole other story. Used to be a lot of bombings there, a little group called, I think, the IRA. And used to be like these checkpoints. So these guys were so... They were so crazy about this is that because they hated the pound and the Brits. It was funny. It just cracks me up. But so we had to stop at this little restaurant on the border to eat because they took euros because they were not going to eat where we had to pay with pounds because they weren't going to have pounds in their pocket. I had pounds and euros, so I didn't really, who cares? It's not my fight. I didn't really care about it. So as soon as you cross the line, you just see British flags all over the place. It just, once again, cracks me up. And so we get to this little church. So it was a little Church of Christ there in Belfast, probably 10, 12 members right on the water, and we worshiped with him there, and the preacher preached, and it was a great service. And they immediately invited us over to their house, and I'm like, man, this is great. We get to hang out with some of these other folks, and we get to hang out with some Brit-Irish people. Don't know what that's going to be like, but let's do it, you know. And so we get to their house, and literally, I mean, I'm seeing British flags everywhere. It just amazed me, and so... But we get to their house, and we're not talking about a nice neighborhood. We're talking about something that was probably built pre-World War II. And one of the things I really picked up on really quick is that people, they just didn't have the money like we think they do. They don't have the subdivisions. I mean, things are all hundreds of years old. Everywhere they live is old. We got into their house, and there was like 15 or 20 of us. I bet it wasn't 500 square feet. Who knows? It wasn't very big at all. When you got in the house, you just sat down and you didn't move again because there was nowhere to move. But they invited everybody over and they're laughing and they're telling stories. We couldn't even fit in there. Old furniture, just an old 100-year-old pre-World War II home, and people are having a good time and they're telling stories. And I'm always curious because a couple days later I had blood pudding and I'm like, I didn't like that. Didn't want any more weird Irish food. So I'm like, what are we going to eat? Didn't know. But you know, when you're in Rome, you go with the Romans. So we're in this place where we can't fit. It's too tight. It's old. It's small. It's very poor. And they said, what's time to eat? And of course, I'm thinking, where's the pizza? Where's, you know... And they just start pulling stuff out of the refrigerator, just pieces of ham and turkey. And they had some tea. And they had a little bit of bread and a couple slices of cheese for like 15 people. And, you know, we ate. Nobody said anything. They told stories about World War II, how they were kids and the bombings. And we talked about being Christians and we talked about America. And we had a great evening. And we left. And it was one of the top 25 moments I would think about. I was in an old rundown location with terrible food. And it's one of the best experiences that I had. And I'm very thankful for those people because they wanted to do something for the preacher and for us that came up there. And they didn't go, well, my house is too small. It's old. It's run down. I don't have any food. I don't even know if they knew if they had any food. They just open the refrigerator up and start putting stuff on the table. I tell you that story just to tell you maybe how some people do it differently in other places. And nobody even thought about it, except for probably me and Stephanie, who talked about it later. So when we think about what we can do, when we have an opportunity, let's not worry about things that aren't important. Let's worry about the things that are important and trying to help each other, being Christians, and do what we need to do. Any questions or comments about this? I'm going to leave this now. Johnny's got one right here. Johnny, don't get me in a hole.
It hasn't been long ago we studied in 1 Corinthians, and when you get into the 11th chapter, Paul was talking to him about marriage, and he's basically talking to the father whether he gives his daughter in marriage or he doesn't. It says there in chapter 11 that a unmarried woman will spend her time serving the Lord, but a married woman will serve her time serving her husband, and he didn't say children, but her family, and that means. And when the conclusion he got from that, neither of them are wrong. And I think we can look at the same thing with Mary and Martha, what each one chose to do, neither one of them technically was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I get from the text. And Jesus clearly had an opportunity, if there was something wrong, to say something about it. Okay, anybody else? All right, my wife down here. I hope she doesn't disagree with me because I have to go home with her. So, and then we got another comment back here in the back.
You were talking about opportunities, and here in a time where maybe women were limited in how much they could participate with a great teacher or be in the presence of a great teacher or go into the synagogue, you see Jesus giving Mary and Martha an opportunity that he didn't go into Lazarus' home. He went into Martha's home. So he went into a woman's home and gave her an opportunity to listen to him at his feet, possibly in a time where that wasn't allowed in a more synagogue worship setting. And she wasn't taking advantage of it like Mary was.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
To Johnny's point, neither was doing wrong, and he didn't even correct Martha until Martha asked. You know, he may have not ever said anything about it unless, without her asking. And then he kind of told her how things were.
Yeah, and what's the lesson about that? Don't ever complain, because you may get hit upside the head. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding, though.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, that what she was doing was a good thing. I think it's what distracts us the devil distracts us with good things. The devil distracts us with our children. The devil distracts us with our job. These are good things. When a good thing becomes the ultimate thing is when the issue comes up. It becomes idolatry. It becomes something that is more important than the Son of God sitting in a house teaching you. And obviously that was something that Mary saw was very important.
Absolutely. Right down here, but Stephanie.
It's our nature as women to want to serve. That's just how we are. That's what we do. That's what we live for. And a lot of times I think we get distracted in serving. And I think this is what happened with Martha. She just got distracted because she was so worried about making sure everything was right, making sure she had the food. And she forgot about what was most important. And I think as women, sometimes that happens with us too.
Sure, it happens with all of us, men and women, all about. Thank you. Todd?
I think it's interesting that the question that is posed is, Lord, do you not care? Don't ask people a question unless you're prepared for an answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Lord, do you not care that she's not helping me? Okay. Then he reveals to her the most important thing. I can understand Martha feeling pressure. It says they. We don't know how many they are. Jesus didn't come in, but they came to her house. I mean, it's very admirable for her. She gave them a place to come, okay? And you can understand she would feel pressure. And everything was fine until she said, Lord, do you not care? I'm the only one doing this. And look at...
Man.
So it was interesting that she asked the question, do you not care?
Yes. Yeah, and he's actually saying, well, I'd rather you listen to me. That's what I'd rather you. That's what I'd rather you be doing. Rodney.
Well, like you said early on, it just emphasizes that no matter where Jesus goes, no matter what he's doing or who he's talking to, he's thinking about spiritual things. And he knows there's not a doubt in his mind what's more important. On the other hand, we are all physical beings, and we want... There's not a person in this room that if Jesus came to their house, they wouldn't bring out the best china and the best food and give him anything he could possibly want or need. We do that for our friends when they come over, to take care of them. They are our honored guests, and we place them above ourselves. So I see both of them doing the right thing, as has been said, but Jesus... When Martha asks him that, she's wanting him to fault what Mary is doing. And he knows what's right. And he will not fault it. But he, at the same time, like you said, he doesn't fault what Martha is doing either, because he knows where her heart is. Okay? And in either place, we all, like has been said, we get distracted and focused on physical things. But Jesus is always focused on what we need to be more like him.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I want to skip through, because we're going to do Judas on Wednesday night. So read all the passages about Judas. That's your homework. We're going to do Judas. But we're going to skip through John 11 a little bit here. This is where Jesus has learned that Lazarus has passed. And so Jesus is debating here about where they should go, and he's going to go. And we learn more here about Jesus' relationship with Lazarus and Martha and Mary. From this point on, it seems like they become like really good friends, hugging friends, Kelly. They become hugging friends, it seems like. And so they become really good friends and very close. And so they're going here. Jesus tells him about dying in the sleep, and we've already read that. I want to pick up here. And Jesus said to them plainly that he had died. Lazarus has died, and I'm glad for your sakes that I was not here, but let's go to him. Therefore, Thomas was called Didymus, said the fellow disciples, let's go. And so when Jesus came, he found already there. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 15 stadia away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them. So then Martha, when she heard that Jesus was coming, went to him. But Mary stayed in the house. Interesting. Martha then said, Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Did she have belief? Was she learning from Jesus? Absolutely. But let's see how far she goes. Even now, I know whatever you ask God, God will give you. Wow. She must have been listening somewhere, because she's got very strong faith here. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise from the dead. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said, yes, Lord, I have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, and he who comes into the world. When she said this, he left and called Mary, her sister, saying secretly, the teacher is here, is calling for you. Wow. Now, does Martha look like someone who wasn't paying attention to Jesus' teaching? I'm not real sure. This could be one of the first confessions here. I forget when Peter's confession was. It was a little bit later, wasn't it? I mean, this is a Peter confession that she's giving here about who Jesus is. So I think it's pretty amazing there with that and where she's at. And so just give me 90 seconds here. How had Martha and Mary grown spiritually? It seems like Martha had grown very spiritually here. So to think that she wasn't spiritually minded, that's not true. She's very spiritually minded. Mary had been where she had been at. And so we see her serving, and we kind of talked about that. And so I just want to pose a question here. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were great friends to Jesus. And ultimately, I think that's the amazing part of this whole story, that Jesus had great friends. Thank you, and we're going to pick up with Judas on Wednesday.